and welcome everyone. In today's show, which is episode 4, myself and my good friend Richard are talking to Mark Duker. But first, let's catch up on what we're up to this week. So Richard, what have you been up to this week?
So this week it's been a bit of a strange week. Some days have been a bit busy, some days have been a bit quiet, but it means I've been able to focus on learning some more about AKS and charts and all of that cool fun stuff. So brushing up on my YAML skills, did a bit of DevOps as well. So we moved from the old deployment method from the portal for a web app to an Azure DevOps pipeline. So that's working a lot better. We're doing a bit of OWASP scanning in there now as well, which is really cool. It transforms the results and sends it as an email or from the pipeline, which is really cool. I really like it. Maybe one day I should do a blog post about it. We'll see how that goes. That's pretty much about it, really. Obviously, still catching up on some of the announcements from Ignite. One thing that seemed to sort of slip through the net was the new automation tasks for like virtual machines. So I did a blog post about that, sort of stop and start VMs. It's quite weird. Like, not many people have sort of seen it at all. It really threw me. I thought more people would have noticed it. But basically, it just uses logic apps in the back end to stop your VM and then start it on schedule. It's a lot better than the previous method. It's a lot better than the previous method that you used, because I know you had quite a lot of issues with the previous one. Yeah, so that's pretty much about it. How about yourself, Gregor?
Yeah, well, just on that, I remember trying to do, I think it was Azure Automation Tasks, and it was a little bit flaky. It wasn't rock solid like I thought it would be. So this week I've been looking into Windows Virtual Desktop, something I didn't really know much about, to be honest, looking into that for a customer. Looks really interesting. Really nice feature, I must admit. Also done a little bit of Docker and AKS for some customers. Again, pretty new to Docker and AKS, so kind of learning that as we go. Kind of blasting through some Pluralsight courses in my spare time, which is always good fun. We also had a Windows Azure Fundamentals for ISV workshop, so I was taking part in that. I was doing the Platform as a Service innovation part of the talk, so we had 4 1-hour sessions back-to-back, and I was doing that. So that was good fun. Been looking at the Docker proof of concept for a customer and some workshop planning as well for some upcoming workshops that we're doing. That's really been my week, to be honest. Tomorrow I'm going to be looking at some Helm chart stuff for one of the guys for work, Wesley, so really looking forward to that. Like yourself, I've still to catch up on Ignite. I haven't even tried to catch up on Ignite. We'll see how we go on with that. We'll probably try that this weekend.
Yeah, there's so much stuff that got announced at Ignite that there's just so much stuff. But we'll get there.
Well, it's always going to be there, so that's good. We've got plenty of time to catch up.
We can carry on with the rest of the show.
Yeah, looking forward to this.
It's going to be a good one, episode 4. So today we are joined by Mark. I'm not going to even attempt to say his surname because I will butcher it. He's an Azure MVP. He's the lead consultant for a company based, I think it's called Xsprint, isn't it, if I remember right? Yeah. And he absolutely loves serverless. So welcome to the show, Mark. It's great to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Yeah, so let me pronounce my own name. It's Duker. Yeah, it's a horrible name. It's definitely not an international name. I'm very sorry. But Duker is the closest thing to it. So Duker is also fine. But awesome. Yeah, please call me Mark.
Good to have you on the show, Mark. So Mark, tell us a little bit about your career background. How did you get started in IT, etc.?
So I actually studied organic chemistry. I started out just wearing a lab coat and glasses and doing lab work at a pharmaceutical company in Amsterdam. It was really fun time because it was a startup company, so there were people brought in from all over the world to start this company up. So it was lots of fun, a lot of very smart people there, and me. I still don't know why, but it was really really quite funny. But for a couple of years, I just did lab work there, and it was nice, but it wasn't really what I thought that it would be. But one of the things that happened there is they did lots of experiments and also collected loads of data, and they had some trouble searching through the data and then visualizing the data. And then I thought, maybe that's a nice challenge for me to help out there. So I actually started in Excel, VBA, writing scripts there, and making some kind of electronic notebooks for the people in the lab to write down their data there and then make sure everything is saved properly and then can report it properly. And then moved to Access databases. And then once C# came out, I started with some C# there. Luckily, all very well supported by the company there. So I went did some certifications from Microsoft. So that was really very nice. And after a couple of years, I thought, okay, I cannot really grow at this company any longer. So then I decided to switch. And then I went to a couple of different consultancy companies, which was really a great learning experience because I've had the first company. I've stayed there for 9 years, which was really quite a while, but it was still quite different work, so that was good. But it was really an eye-opener to start doing IT and then consultancy and visiting all these different companies and all their unique problems and meeting all these people. That's really what I still like, yeah, because I'm still doing consulting, but it's really nice to visit all these companies and meeting all these different people. That's really super good.
Awesome. That sounds quite a journey, really. It's sort of
it was
falling
yeah.
into it a bit, but like yeah it sounds really cool. Especially wearing a lab coat. That would be fun. You should maybe do some videos with a lab coat on. It would be amazing.
Serverless. I'm not sure if I still have it. I do have the lab glasses still, but not the coat, I think. But I need to do a bit of searching. Yeah.
So I hear you are like the co-organizer of Serverless Days in Amsterdam. Could you sort of tell our listeners who don't know about this what it is, how you got started organizing it, and what your plan next, if anything?
Yeah. So there's a whole Serverless Days community. It's a global community, and they have several local instances. And one of the instances is in Amsterdam. And I got in touch with them a couple of years ago because it was already up and running. And I wrote a call for papers together with a colleague of mine to actually speak for the Serverless Amsterdam conference. I think it was 3 years ago. And that got accepted, and it was really, really nice success. It was really fun to talk there, and it was really nice community. It was so fun that I think I asked there, okay, hey, if you need any help, let me know. I'll be glad if I can help you for the next conference. And they were actually starting to organize some local meetups as well. They accepted my help. Since then, it's been really a fun ride with the team. It's been slowly growing as well. So we got really a bunch of good folks there. Just organizing all. Yeah, I think it's a meetup almost every month now, and there's the yearly conference as well. Last time we, of course, due to the whole COVID situation, it was online, but it went quite okay. It was a bit stressful for me because I was in charge of most of the technical tasks of the streaming and OBS and stuff like that. But it was really, really fun to do.
That's no small challenge, Mark, trying to organize all that, let me tell you. especially OBS.
it was really quite a technical challenge, Anita. And it didn't went super smooth, but it went okay enough, so it wasn't too obvious.
Right. You also took part in the Azure Community Live, I believe, is that right?
Yeah, indeed. So yeah, there have been two editions now, and for the first one I was speaking there about serverless, and for the second one I was co-hosting it and doing some interviewing of speakers, which is really nice. So yeah, I like to be on either side of conference, both organizing and co-hosting, but also speaking. So I'm very happy that I could be a part of that.
That's awesome. So talking about the community. And obviously, you're very active in it. What does the community actually mean to you?
Well, the community thing started, let's say, relatively late in my career. So first, I didn't really have any eye for it. But later on, especially the more recent years, I really value it a lot because I think it's a really good experience, where it can be a good experience to skill up, to learn new skills. because most of the meetups are free. So the boundary is very low to attend some of these meetups, especially now because they're online. And I really value knowledge sharing. So for me, being able to take part in hosting and co-organizing meetups, I'm really grateful that I can do that, so I can help others in IT, and hopefully you need lots of newcomers in IT as well. It's the importance of the community has been growing over the years. So I hope I can participate that in many more years to come.
That's awesome as well. Yeah, cool. I remember asking a question on Twitter about Azure Durable Functions, and your good self jumped to the rescue. So, yeah, thank you for doing that. That was awesome.
that was a fun challenge. Yeah, I still need to write about it, actually. It's still in my mind, that example.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a challenge, but it was a good challenge. Yeah, so thank you for that.
You
also did a session at MS Build called the Build and Secure Serverless APIs. That must have been pretty exciting. Tell me a little bit about that, and how did that opportunity come about?
Yeah, well, that's also a lucky side benefit of co-organizing meetups and conferences, because for our Serverless Days Amsterdam conference, we asked Simona Cotin, one of the cloud advocates of Microsoft, to do one of the keynotes. And then it was Simona who actually invited me to be part of a Serverless discussion panel during Build. So that was a really, really nice experience. Yeah. So we were with Simona and two others. And it was a very nice open discussion on how are you, or what can you do about securing and building serverless APIs? What should you think about? What are common pitfalls? So that was, it was a really excellent opportunity. I was really, really happy with that. The whole Build experience was pretty cool, even though it was virtual this time. I didn't mind that, to be honest.
I thought Build was great online, to be honest. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
It was good that it was online, because I finally got to attend one as well, which was really good for me.
I would have preferred it was my first Build experience as well, because I never attended the real life one. So it was a good first experience, this online one.
I was never really sure if I prefer Ignite or Build. I still don't really know, because they're both really excellent. So it was good to be able to attend the Build and see what it was like. Definitely.
But it was just a bit overwhelming, because there were so many sessions. So it's actually hard to choose.
So you do quite a lot of stuff. You're very creative as well. You've got this sort of Azure Functions game. How did that come about? And tell us a bit more about it.
So I've always been a big fan of retro games. So I was when I was little, I played the Prince of Persia game on an old DOS computer. So and I'm still liking those games. So I'm not playing them as much as before. But what I am doing now, and I should spend a bit more time on it, but I actually like to create those retro games. And I found a really nice platform to do it on. It's called Pico 8. So that's the development environment, and you program in Lua. So that was a challenge, because I didn't know any Lua, but it's not so bad to get started with that. The API of Lua is pretty limited, so you don't have to learn a lot to get going. But the whole IDE is in itself also retro and very low resolution. So you can write your games, which are like 128 pixels by 128 pixels, but also the whole IDE is in the same resolution. So it's also really weird when you make the game in that IDE, because it's in itself quite a challenge to write code and with all these tiny fonts and draw your sprites in there and make music. Azure Functions, the game, because of course I'm a big Azure Functions fan. So I thought, okay, I want to make a game, but something which is also close to my heart, and hopefully a lot of people in the tech community would like it. So that was my first retro game, actually. It was quite a success. I didn't expect it to be that big a success. So it's really funny. I still have some more ideas for games, but I need to free up a bit of time to actually make.
I mean, I wanted to ask you about, I was actually playing Cheez-It Deathmatch game today, which which he also wrote. Where do you get these ideas from? Because
yeah, that one is definitely a bit special, because that one is really inspired by Build, because there was a short, well, there was a break in Build where Dona and Seth were making their own Cheez-Its. So it was like a competition, wow, who made the best Cheez-Its. And I read on Twitter also that the team, so Dona and Seth, they had their own, let's say, acronym or their own word for being the team, and that was then Death. So D-E-T-H, so Dona and Seth together. And then one of the final sessions of Build was about a make code, which is a really nice playground to actually make our arcade games or make IoT low code projects, mm-hmm, with IoT for connecting Arduino stuff, for instance. So then I thought, what if I can actually do something practical with the make code solution to quickly make a game about Dona and Seth fighting over Cheez-Its. So it's a two-player game. One plays Dona, one plays Seth, and you have to collect as many Cheez-Its snacks as possible and within a limited amount of time. So I created the game within, I think, 1.5 hours or something. It's using Blockly technology, mm-hmm, so just click and drag stuff. So it's very nice to make a game with that. The game is definitely not super well working, because there is some strange stuff with scores and stuff. But it was a really nice experience to directly after a session about a new technology to actually get your hands dirty and starting with that technology. So that was a lot of fun.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
You know, it's a good session when you can go off and actually go and produce something like that straight away afterwards. So
yeah, it felt really satisfying to immediately really make something. It's really cool. Yeah, highly recommend it for both kids and grown-ups.
Awesome. So talking about making things, you make a lot of 8-bit avatars. I see one today of one of the Disney princesses. Like, how did you get started into this, and why do you do it? Because they're awesome.
Yeah, so that happened a bit before Build, because then I created first my own avatar. So I think it happened about the same time when I was starting with the Azure Functions, the game. And then during Build, I wanted to show some support for the host of Build. So I created avatars for them. And then they really liked it. So there was quite some noise on Twitter, and they immediately started using it. So that was really funny. And of course, they also mentioned that at the end of Build. Mm-hmm. And so there was a huge demand of 8-bit avatars. So I was really busy for a couple of weeks creating these avatars in my evenings. So that was both funny, but also a bit too big of a success.
How many avatars do you think you've done for people?
I think I'm now almost at 200 now. Because it's still going on. So I'm now still creating some avatars for, because there was a contest for Create Serverless, a recent mm-hmm, conference. And one of the things people could win was an avatar. So I'm creating several for those. And also nice, for who were involved in the code of conduct and moderation of Create Serverless. I'm also making some avatars. So it's still going on. It'll probably keep going for a while, which is nice. But not too much at the same time, because then I don't get any sleep anymore.
Yeah, that's important. Sleep's important.
So yeah, exactly.
You also did the Azure Functions update to Twitterbot. How did that come about, and kind of what technologies are you using under the covers?
Yeah, so that got started when I was experimenting with serverless. It's now already a couple of years ago. But what was really tricky in the beginning, that everything was moving so fast and there were so many individual components with Azure Functions. So you have the runtime, you get all these different extensions and templates for Visual Studio and stuff like that. So there are literally dozens of moving parts for Azure Functions. And definitely in, let's say the first half year, stuff would just break because you had some outdated package or something. there were some breaking changes. So then I thought, I need some kind of way to be notified when new releases are available. Because everything is now open source, I'm actually monitoring all of the GitHub repos that Microsoft is using. So I'm monitoring about 40 or so individual GitHub repos. Because Azure Functions is of course C Sharp, but also Python and Java and PowerShell and all kinds of stuff. So it keeps growing and growing still. And whenever there's a new release available, it sends out a tweet with a link to the release information on GitHub. Because it's Azure Functions, I also wanted to run on Azure Functions. So the backend is indeed and Azure Functions. It's actually an orchestration, a durable functions orchestration, which reads some information from a storage account, from a table, and then connects to the GitHub API to read in latest release information, and then does a comparison between what I have in my storage table and what's there from the API. And if there's any new information, I tweet it. So that was a really nice experience to build a real product as a side project. Yeah,
that's really cool. That's really cool. I like that. Maybe we need it for AKS as well, because that's constantly changing at the moment as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's all open source, so you can just fork it and change it to your liking. Yeah.
Awesome. I guess we'll put the link to the open source project in the description box. So if you could send us that afterwards,
that's
available.
Yeah.
And then I can have a play hopefully as well, if I can find some time. Earlier, we talked quite a bit about Build and other conferences. So totally changing the subject here a bit. What is your favorite conference you've ever been to?
That's really tricky, to be honest, because conferences are improving each year. So frequently, just every recent most conference is usually the best. but of course in these days everything is virtual, which on the one hand is of course not so nice because the interaction is quite lower, so that's not good, but it is more accessible in general, so that's what I definitely do like. I think for me personally, the Build conference we already talked about was really a personal highlight, because of it I gave two sessions there, and also because of the 8-bit avatars I was making and got some attention there. So yeah, that's definitely a personal favorite. There is one conference I've never been to, and I would love to go there once everything is possible travel wise again, and that's called Strange Loop. I'm not sure if you ever heard about it. It's in the US. And it's about all kinds of technology and creators. It's really very broad, but that's also what I like about it. It's not just focused on one provider or one technology or whatever. It's about a lot of different things. So it covers really many, many subjects. That's why I'm also very interested in it, because I also have a very broad interest. So I think it will be a perfect conference for me.
Sounds like it, Mark. Yeah. I've not heard of that one, I must admit.
Yeah, it's been going on since 2011 or something. So it's been on for quite a while. So yeah, okay. Definitely recommend it.
Okay, I'll need to check that out. Mark, where do you see Azure Functions expanding? Do you see it kind of heading towards more durable functions becoming more popular, or what do you think?
Oh yeah, I definitely see people and organizations using it more and more, because I definitely see it at the clients I work for. And whenever I go to a new client, people have usually heard from it but haven't used it that much yet. So I definitely expect an increase still in the usage of it. And definitely also durable functions, because it feels a really nice niche, I think, because a lot of things which are not really possible with serverless as it is, because it's stateless by nature, is possible with durable functions. So I also see companies replacing other workflow related tooling like BizTalk, for instance, and replacing it with durable functions. I definitely see that continuing for a while.
Devis is the map checker description of what durable functions are, just in case anyone listening doesn't really know what they are. What are durable functions?
Good point. Well, if you have, for instance, it's very suitable for, let's say, longer running workflows. So, for instance, if you want to do just one tiny thing, then just a basic Azure function will do. But if you want to do a couple of things, you want to chain functions together, or you want to do stuff in parallel, for instance, so you want to do some fan out and then wait for the result and fan in, or you want to, let's say, you want to monitor a certain API for a while and you need to wait for hours or days, some stuff like that wouldn't be possible with Azure Functions on its own. But that's definitely a couple of the use cases where you can use durable functions. So long running workflows, it's really built for that.
So do you think functions are better than logic apps, or because, you know, they do quite similar jobs really? Because you can do a bit of inline code, like I think it's JavaScript in functions now as well. So there seems to be a bit of crossover there.
There's a lot of overlap. Yeah, no, indeed. And then there's also power apps or Flow before. So there's a lot of tools which have some overlap, but still needs quite some pros and cons for each of them. For logic apps, they used to be that you can't really run them locally and test them locally, but that has been tackled now, because actually you can run them locally, so that's good. But I think for most developers, they know how to write code, I don't think they're very fond of clicking and dragging blocks in the graphical interface, which is more for logic apps wise. So if you come from a let's say traditional development background, then I think you would feel more comfortable with Azure Functions than Flow or logic apps. How about if you come from not a developer background, then logic apps and Flow are probably much more suitable. So I think it's good they have a lot of different products, which also some overlap, because you could, for instance, start with Flow and then move to logic apps and then move to functions. And they also mix and match really nice. So you can call a function from a logic app, for instance. So yeah, everything has a value there.
I was quite surprised. I had done some Azure Functions before, but I hadn't really looked at durable functions. Mm-hmm. And the whole kind of orchestrator pattern is quite nice, where you can wait for an orchestrator to do one task and then do another function and then call another function, and storing state as well is quite a cool thing.
Yeah, it does require quite a bit of different way of thinking. Yeah? So if you are really used to just creating your web API and you're used to having a web server which is on all the time, then it's a bit of a different mindset to now architect more like event-driven systems. And with functions and queues and stuff like that. So that's, I think, the biggest challenge we still have to go through. And it requires a bit of a different mindset.
Yeah. Okay, let's change pace a little bit. What's your favorite place in the world that some people won't have heard of?
My favorite place in the world, I think, is definitely Iceland. I've been there a couple of years ago, and that was really amazing. I also love photography, so I took really thousands of pictures there. And they have these beautiful waterfalls. Also lots and lots of them. But they have these really unpronounceable names, of course. I think it was the Oddeyarfoss or something. It's a really big waterfall with black basalt stone next to it. That is really breathtakingly beautiful.
Did you manage to get to see the Northern Lights? Because when I went, we won.
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was really amazing. Yeah, we were very lucky that I think we were there for like 8-9 days or something, but we saw it twice. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's so nice. It's such a lovely place. You just feel so safe just walking around at night and everything there.
Yeah,
I love it there. Did the Blue Lagoon? Did you do that as well?
It's quite amazing because it's not so it's not so big, but there's quite a lot of diversity there, even in such a small place. So if you like nature and really rough nature, so you should definitely go there.
Yeah, I love it. We're doing this podcast for the Cloud Family and everything. We're getting people on like yourself who are good in the community, doing lots of cool stuff. So who should we talk to next?
I think Floor Drees is a good one to talk to. I'm not sure if you heard from her. Mm-hmm. She works for Microsoft. She's a DevRel program manager, and she does a lot for their community. Yeah? So not only for Microsoft related communities, but also for a lot of different open source communities. And she does a lot for diversity and inclusion aspects as well. So yeah, if you ever want to have a chat with her, I definitely recommend that. She's really cool.
Good show. What about someone who's not so well known? Is there anyone who you know that most people don't know that you might want to suggest?
I'm going close to home because one of my colleagues, I did quite a nice project with him. It's called Reinier van Manen. And I'm still working on the project with him because we are creating a text adventure web-based game for kids, and especially also suitable for blind kids. So
nice.
Maybe it's nice if you can talk about that next time.
Definitely, that's good.
Yeah, I like it. So one more question from me, I think. Earlier you talked about retro games and stuff. Now, I used to collect retro games and ended up selling most of them, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But, you know, moving houses and that, you sort of need the space.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite retro game?
I think that's still Prince of Persia, which I mentioned.
It's a good choice.
Before. Yeah. And but I also have good memories of, let's say, the first Duke Nukem games before it was all 3D and stuff. So it was like a very tiny figure, which really silly sounds and jumping around. And Commander Keen, I was also a big fan of that. So those are at the top of my mind now. Yeah.
Do you still play games? Do you still play games now? Or?
Not so much. I do have an Xbox, but I don't play that often, to be honest. That's one of my problems. I have too many hobbies. So I also like creating music, and I'm building up a modular synthesizer right now. Sometimes I want to spend some time on that. And then there's, of course, actually creating games instead of playing them. So yeah, there's just too much going on. too little time.
Do you ever have any downtime?
Hardly. Yeah. Well, I also like to read. So
I can't imagine you going on the beach all day and sitting on a beach walk.
No. That's no. I mean, when I'm on a holiday, it's a mix of need relaxing, but also doing stuff, because I can't have a couple of weeks on the beach and doing nothing. That's definitely not for me.
Yeah, same. I like to go and see things, do things, and still a bit of technology as well. You know, can't just hand off the phone or something. I need that fix of the internet and whatnot.
Yeah, well, what I think is really important is that you do more than just consuming stuff, because it's of course very easy to sit behind a TV or behind a laptop or tablet and just consume things. But if you're using technology also to make stuff, then I think you also learn from it, and others can benefit and enjoy from it as well. If you can have a bit of both consuming and creating stuff, then I think you're in a good spot.
Okay, I've got one more question for you, Mark. Now that everybody's working from home, or most people are working from home, is there anything you've bought tech-wise that you would recommend? Or is there anything you've bought, like a new monitor or a new light or a new web camera or anything like that that stands out?
I can definitely recommend to need a bit of a decent webcam and microphone. I've got this microphone here, which is actually not so expensive. I think it was like not even 50 euros. It looks expensive, but it isn't.
What kind is it?
It's a Marantz. So I'm not sure if it's any... I don't think it's that well known, but it serves a good purpose, and I need a good webcam. But it's also important if you have a bit light. Right? So your webcam can be need super fancy, but if you still have very bad light, then it still doesn't look that good. But it doesn't need to be any professional light or whatever. But any bit of light definitely helps.
So that's all we've got time for today. Huge big thanks, Mark, for coming on. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you today. I hope everyone enjoyed today's show, and we look forward to bringing you more episodes like this one. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye-bye.